Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
So welcome to those of you that are here. My name is Patty Whipler, and I'm the founder and the program director at Hand in Hand Parenting. And I'll introduce Amy McLean, who is going to talk with us about how to stop bullying in just a few moments. So Hand in Hand is an organization that is dedicated to making your parenting go well. We really want you to be able to put your head on the pillow at night and say to yourself, wow, it was kind of a hard day and we had all of these different challenges, but I was a good mom or I was a good dad today, and I have really good children. And that's what we're hoping for. We're really hoping that parents can be pleased and rewarded in their work as parents. And the way we support parents is to offer classes and free online resources, sometimes free talks in some communities, so that they can hear the parenting that we promote called Parenting by Connection. And as far as we can tell, we think that paying attention to the parent-child connection in parenting is the way to help children grow up confident and warm and flexible and eager for the challenges in their lives and in the world at large. And Parenting by Connection certainly makes the parents who are doing the parenting able to thrive in the middle of that job, because we're concentrating as much on building parent support for the emotional work of parenting as we are on helping parents understand how to connect well with their children and how to really help their children over emotional and behavioral hurdles as the parenting, you know, challenge goes on. So we really like to support parents. We do it through classes, we do it through articles, we do it through, self-guided videos on various major parenting topics, and we do it through this teleseminar. And we're a nonprofit. Our approach has 35 years with 40 years of experience behind it, and but there's cutting-edge research that also supports this way of looking at parenting in this way of connecting well with children. So we're here for you, and tonight I'm very, very happy to introduce Amy McLean. I've known Amy for several years, and she is wonderful. I'm really looking forward to her information and her insights tonight. She has taught bullying prevention to thousands of parents, teachers, administrators, and to students for 10 years. Through a company called Bullshop. And on her own, she has developed an anti-bullying curriculum for schools and for workshops and has taken the hand-in-hand instructor training. So that's how I got to know Amy. Although she was using hand-in-hand listening tools from the time her son was very small. So she is a fellow parent and has really been working with this issue for many years and has good wisdom to share with us. We're not going to be able to learn everything Amy knows tonight, but Amy, please tell us what you can in our teleseminar time here. What we're going to do is have Amy talk for a while, and then I'm going to talk for a very brief time about the contribution that hand-in-hand listening tools can make to parents whose children are struggling with bullying, either because they are, you know, a bully, having bullying behaviors, or because they're being targeted by children with those behaviors. So I'll talk a little bit about that, but mostly we want to devote the second half of our teleseminar to hearing your questions and providing resource for you. So, Amy, I'm so glad to have you. Thank you very much for coming tonight.
Thank you, Patty. I'm so, so thrilled to be here. For so many reasons, when I was telling my people in my community about the event tonight, I was like, I'm on with my mentor, Patty Whipler. you know, because I'm sure anyone who's joining this call who's experienced your work is feels as grateful and indebted to you for our joyful relationship with our children as I do. So I just want to thank you for having me. It's a real honor to be here with you.
Yeah.
Hello. Thank you. Hello, everyone. Welcome to tonight's call. And I want to just present that I think there are lots of different people who have signed up. Of all the people who just even told me that they were signing up, there was such a wide range of ages and experience. And I want to say that, you know, whether your child is 2 or 12, you're going to get some really amazing stuff out of tonight. And whether your child is 2 or 12, it's not too late to really step in and handle whatever's coming up and to learn how to handle it in such a way that your child is empowered, they know how to take care of themselves, they know who they are, and they don't get scarred for life by the things that we worry they're going to get scarred for life by. So as we start this talk, you know, I just wanted to present who we all are as caring, loving parents who want the best for our kids. And I also want to present how tough this topic can be, partly because it's our kids, it's our lifeblood, and when they're threatened, it's just so excruciating. And partly because it brings up things from our own childhood, things we saw, things we experienced that maybe we didn't get supported on when we were little. And for a third reason, because there's huge cultural alarm happening right now about bullying. And the alarm is being sounded is so, so important. And that it's being sounded so intensely makes it even more difficult for us to manage whatever fear or sadness that we might have about what's happening to our kids, because all of the stuff that we're seeing on the media is so dire and extreme that it's like, oh my God, you know, our kids are going to go die or commit suicide. And it's really intense to take in that information. So I want to acknowledge that all those energies and all those feelings could be up. For some of you, I want to acknowledge that some of you have children who are so little, you're just wanting to, like, get your foot in the door and get started early, and that's great, too. And I want to just say that it is really possible to raise confident, happy kids with a lot of self-esteem and a lot of personal power. It's really possible, and we're going to talk about it. I'm committed to helping you with that tonight. So I wanted to say the first thing is the good news and the bad news about bullying. I mean, obviously the bad news is that we can't control what happens to our kids when they're not with us. We can't control other people. We can't prevent conflict or people from teasing or yelling or pushing or acting bad out there in the world. But the good news is that we can set our kids up for success, and we can even use these experiences that they're having to help them grow into powerful, communicative, empathetic adults. All of these experiences. And that is really, really good news. So there's a little bit of bad news and the good news, which is that setting them up for this is a process, right? Like, I'm sure many of you, as I have told your children when they come home with something that it's not about them, or don't take it personally, or something like that, and you've seen them not be able to embrace that feedback or not be able to see reason. And I wanted to say that this is a process. I mean, Patty teaches a 6-week course on understanding children's emotions, and I have a coaching package for bully-proofing your kids that takes 5 sessions, and it's in-depth and it's practice. So this next 15 minutes isn't going to be everything that you need to bully-proof your kid forever. But I am committed to getting us all started with some of the most important pieces for really bully-proofing our kids and having them feel confident and be able to handle the adverse situations. And then at the end, we'll go through some real-life questions, and there's a ton of learning that comes out of that. And also at the end, I know both Patty and I are going to be giving some stuff away, so to really land this for everybody, because this topic, it's really time to shift what's happening around bullying. And I'm in so many schools, and I work with so many kids and parents and teachers that it's just like, it's so clear that it's time to change it. And this work that Patty's doing and that I'm doing, I believe is like it's the forefront of changing this for our planet. So I'm so, so thankful that you're here and that you're wanting to step in this way for your own children, because child by child is how we are going to take care of this. So thank you for hearing me start with that. And let's get on the same page to start with about bullying. In California, I want to say what bullying is, because there is a legal definition. And I think that it's gotten a little crazy with people thinking that bullying is everything. Not to say that the little things aren't also equally painful, but I want to be clear about what bullying is specifically. So in California, in the law, bullying is unwanted aggressive behavior among school-age children that involves real or perceived power imbalance. The behavior is repeated or has the potential to be repeated over time, and it is on purpose. So the main things about bullying by law is that it's unwanted, aggressive, on purpose, repeated, and includes a perceived power imbalance. So the power imbalance could be racial, it could be gender, it could be bigger to smaller, older to younger, adult to child. It's the problem with the definition is that some of these things are really sticky and they're not totally definable. Like on purpose, for example, and meant to do harm is really not distinguishable for first graders, because even when a first grader looks like they're meaning to whack you on the head and you can tell they did it on purpose, there's something else going on for them that causes them to do that, and it isn't actually intention. I just want to make sure that really lands. Like when a first grader hits another first grader and they totally mean it and they're totally mad, it's not intentional. It's not coming from a part of their brain that makes logical, intentional choices. That action is coming from a different part of their brain that's defensive. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes, but I just wanted to make that point clear, and I'll let you understand that in a little bit. So I'm going to start with an anecdote. This is a story, and it's really about me, because with most of the adults I teach and most of the schools I teach in, the real bullying starts around fourth grade, and that's when it started for me. With the entrance of a new kid and changing social dynamics and exclusion and teasing and me looking tall and different because I'm about 6 feet tall. And bullying often starts in fourth grade because there's a developmental change happening. It actually starts in third grade with the beginning of separation. And when children begin to get their own separate identities, like they kind of go out of this world where we're all one and, you know, everything's, you know, about me and I'm connected to everything in the whole world. when they turn eight, they start to shift out of that and separate and start to realize that they're their own person. For me, when my son turned eight, you know, I swear on his eighth birthday, he stepped on my foot. And he's a really big kid, too, with not a lot of sensory perception. Like, he's, you know, one of those big kids who kind of stumble around. And usually if he bumps me, he didn't notice. You know, he was just kind of, he was a bull in a china shop. And this time he bumped me and he stepped on my foot and he stopped and he looked at me and he goes, "Mom, are you okay? And I was amazed. I was like, what? What? Whoa. And I really, and then I was like, oh, he's eight. It's happening. His brain is changing. But that separation, that individuation creates anxiety in the brain and the nervous system. Because if I'm not one with everything, if I'm just one person over here, I'm separate, then where do I actually belong? And what happens is, that's not an actual thought, obviously, but that's the state of a fourth grader. And that's why fourth graders are really clinging, trying to find who they belong to. And sometimes they'll separate forcefully to claim their belonging. So I want to just say something about what happened to me. But before I do, I need to tell you what happens in a child's brain when they feel unsafe, actually for any of us. When we're naturally cooperative and flexible and happy and we want to participate, that's our natural brain thinking state. But when we're feeling unsafe, our natural thinking state becomes disconnected. And it's hard for us to be ourselves, our natural selves, in the face of the stress, because our cortex literally starts to shut down and another part of our brain takes over. The brainstem, which is more reflexive, it's more defensive. And when we're feeling unsafe and defensive and the brainstem takes over, it really only knows how to do three things: fight, freeze, or flee. So with little kids, you can tell that they're disconnected from their natural state because they really will fight, right? They'll just whack each other or they'll freeze. You know, you'll be telling them something and they'll just glaze over and you can tell they're not paying attention. Or they will actually run away. No! You know, lock the door, start kicking. As children get older, it becomes harder to tell if they're disconnected. Because sometimes when you see a child roll their eyes, you don't think they're disconnected. You think they're a jerk and they're being disrespectful. But the truth is, even that eye rolling a lot of times about like, oh, that's a disconnection. That's a defensive response. And once we can start to look at that, then we can look at, okay, how do we actually make a reconnection rather than how do we get our kid to stop being a jerk? That's a much tougher problem. So for me, now that you know that little piece about the brain, when we feel unsafe, we get disconnected, we're not thinking, we're defending. And bullying is obviously a place where people are massively feeling unsafe. When there's a power imbalance, we're feeling unsafe. So we react differently. Even people who are in the upside of a power imbalance can feel unsafe and not be able to connect to their thinking self. So I want to give you a story so you can really understand this. When I was in fourth grade, there was a combination of factors that had me crumbling to the bullying that was happening in my school, and had me stay there and suffer so much later in my life. So one of the factors was the students at my school. So this new girl who came in, you know, she was a mean girl for sure. And she was popular and cute and sarcastic and mean and separated everybody out and claimed my best friend for her own. Now, knowing what I know now about the brain, I can look and go, okay, clearly she was disconnected. I don't know why. I don't know how. Maybe it was because she was moving to a new town. She didn't know anybody, but I don't know. But anyway, for me at that point, she was just a mean girl. And I was now at the bottom of the heap. And I might have been able to handle that and have my own self-esteem and stand up for something if the other factors hadn't been there. Like, one, I didn't know what to say to her. I didn't even know how to perceive what she was doing. I knew what she was doing was mean, and I knew it was wrong. But the key is, I didn't know it wasn't true. So she was saying mean things about me that were also true in some degree, in some little degree. She's commenting on my height, on my physical features. She was commenting on the fact that I always raised my hand in class. So I didn't know how to separate that. And I questioned myself rather than questioning her. And part of that is because of some of the other factors, right? One is, I didn't have enough self-esteem or training to handle the humiliation. When the humiliation happened, I did not question her. I questioned myself. because when humiliation happened to me at home in the form of discipline, I was not allowed to question. If I questioned, I got in trouble and punished. So I learned to question myself because of some of the discipline that was happening in my house. I was not allowed to stand up for myself. And fourthly, why I questioned myself instead of her is because sometimes when my parents were frustrated with me at home, they would say things that shamed me. So I didn't have the self-esteem to deal with what she was saying. I felt shamed, right? And I felt like it must be true because my parents said it was true. And what my parents said didn't, you know, looking back, it doesn't feel like it was all that bad. It was just things like, if I made a mistake, it was like, what are you thinking? Why don't you go over there and sit down and think about what you just did? Or, why are you being so lazy? Why can't you do what I'm asking? You know, and the fundamental energy under that is like, what's wrong with you? And the fundamental thought process in me is something is wrong with me. So when someone else notices something's wrong with me, I believe that to be true. And then, so the last factor is I didn't even bring it up to my parents. It was happening, and I suffered there all on my own because I didn't know what to say to her. I didn't want to tell them that someone else thought I was weird, you know, like it was too embarrassing. And I didn't have enough self-esteem from the way I was disciplined at home. So the last thing I want to say, the last factor is that my parents didn't know how to recognize the signs. Like the fact that I was fighting excessively with my sister, who was the only person that I could actually have power with, right? Or the fact that I would have attitude about my chores, which they would take as me being entitled rather than me having some kind of disconnection going on. Those are some of the signs. Or if I just didn't want to go to school and I would say, no, I don't want to go, I don't want to go, I don't know. You know, or I didn't want to do my homework or I was insisting on not participating. They just didn't know how to recognize those signs. Now, my parents weren't horrible people, okay? But they didn't know how the brain and the nervous system work, and they often misinterpreted my defensiveness. They misinterpreted my attitudes. They misinterpreted my silence. And as a result, I didn't get taken care of in there. And it's taken me years to develop that kind of ability to reconnect with myself again after all of that. So one of the things I love about working with Patty is that when you learn to develop that feeling for yourself, you do that through listening partnerships, listening pairs. You do that through exploring some of those feelings and taking care of them. And that's something that hand in hand is just so incredibly powerful about helping us do. But I want to just keep this really focused. I can give you some steps to take. So most often now, I don't see parents doing some of the things my parents did to me. I don't see parents doing a lot of explicit yelling at their kids in terms of, like, what's wrong with you? Although I know a lot of it is out there. More often what I see now, though, is parents are really alarmed. We're alarmed. We're upset. Because if our kid comes home saying they're bullied, all these media images of the intense bullying situations people have gone through come up in our minds. And then, you know, we feel really worried and upset that something very bad is happening. And so I see parents get really fiercely protective when their kids bring home that feeling of, like, that story of I've been excluded or nobody likes me or I've been bullied. I see parents get really angry and upset. And I want to say this is the first mistake. Okay, so it's not that you don't want to take care of what's happening to your kids and figure it out. But we don't want to react with our alarm because when we do that, the child feels less safe. And then their thinking is less able to show up. So what we really want to do instead of reacting is take a breath for ourselves before we do anything. Right? So if your child comes home and says they were teased or excluded or bullied at school, the very first thing you want to do is take a breath and bring yourself to a place where you can be at least neutral, if not empathetic and supportive. Right? So you want to take a breath. And, like, I don't know if you've ever seen a a baby at the park, and then you see them fall over, and their parents go, oh no, are you okay? And the baby wasn't crying yet, but as soon as they see the parents go, oh, are you okay? They run over and start crying. It's like that with bullying. When more kids come home and they say they've been teased or bullied, we go, oh my God, that's horrible. Who is that jerk of a kid? Let me go talk to somebody about that. And what that does is it further traumatizes the child, creating that victim feeling for the child and making them feel less safe. So the first thing you want to do is take your breath and just listen. Ask more. Tell me more about that. Oh, that looks like it didn't feel good. That would hurt my feelings if that happened to me. I would not like that. And reflect back a little bit empathetically what's happened for them. So that's the first thing to do when your child is getting bullied. Take a deep breath and then relate with them, empathize. And like, you can even say things that are reassuring, like, well, you're home safe now, and I've got you now. And then you can also start to cultivate a sense of curiosity from a very, very young age in children when something bad happens. It's not to say you're not setting a limit, because you are going to set a limit. Okay, I'm going to get there. But the first thing to do is to react with that curiosity for them and relating and empathy, and then curiosity for the other side. Boy, I wonder why they would do that. You know, I know him. He's a nice boy. I wonder why he would do that. Something must be wrong. You know, like just cultivating that idea, there's something going on over there, which raises your own child's self-esteem and actually has them start to see that the problem really is over there. And usually with bullying, the problem is with the child who's doing the bullying. There's some tension there. People act aggressively when they're afraid. And the fear might not be from right now. It might be from something else. So when you see a little kid acting aggressively and you think he's a little jerk, stop yourself right there, too, and go, oh, he's disconnected. I wonder what he's afraid of. Can I step in and set a limit and help him with his fear? And then you're also modeling that there's a way to stand up for yourself that isn't putting someone else down or squashing them, right? You're standing up for yourself by seeing something, recognizing it, and setting your boundary and turning them away. So I'm going to tell you how to intervene here in just a second, because I'm almost out of time, but I want to make sure that you get that that's the first step. Calm, deep breath, relate, empathize, reflect, reassure, and cultivate that curiosity. And you can then, when they have, they're feeling connected later and they've moved through some of the feelings, you really want them to get some of those feelings out. And Patty's got a great story about that that I know she's going to share with you a little bit about doing a role play. Where you can set up a little play listening with them, but I'm not going to tell that now. But once they've moved through those feelings and they're reconnected, then they can think again. So then the second step is really helping them learn what to say when that happens to them. And they're going to learn that by two things, okay? One of the ways they're going to learn it is you have to teach it explicitly, okay? They don't know how to just stand up for themselves necessarily. I mean, it's natural to, like, if you've been cared for and raised with respect, it's natural to have enough self-respect that if someone hits you, you go, hey, don't do that. You know, you have enough self-esteem to react that way. but if we're not modeling that, like, for example, if we are over-punishing in the home or if we are doing a lot of shaming in the home with our discipline, then a child might not have that kind of self-respect. So we want to teach them explicitly what to say, but we want to implicitly model their self-respect, okay, by not using our discipline to just squash them by setting healthy limits. And there's a whole course on this that I could go in. I can't go into right now, but Patty has a great course and a pamphlet on it, and it's part of my coaching package too. So just know that there are some incredible ways to set limits without squashing or without damaging or traumatizing a child. So we want to help them move through their feelings, sit and think again. And then when you have role played or done some play listening so they can move through their feelings, then you want to teach them what to say. Okay? So what they say when someone does that, the first thing they say is, please stop. And you just teach them to say that, to put their hand up and say, please stop. And they could just say, please stop. We don't do this at our school. Please stop. I don't like that. And then the second thing to say is, do you need help? And you would be amazed how fast that would stop a kid who's bullying. Amazed. It's like people go, you're just telling them to hug the bully, but it's not true. It's like when you turn to a child who's bullying and you say, do you need some help? they are stunned because that's never the reaction that they get. And it's very effective. So those are a few things. And then for teaching them what to say to themselves is one thing and checking in, but then also intervening at your school or with the parents at the park or wherever. But just notice when you intervene with them, are you going in with your full charge and your full, my kid was victimized? Because if you go in with that energy, is that person on the other end going to feel safe or unsafe? Unsafe. And they're not going to be able to hear what happens from your perspective. So if you really want to have that conversation, again, it's about handling your own feelings and getting to a place where you can come into the dialogue in a way that recognizes that that teacher is also a human being, and if they've made a mistake, it's a mistake. They're not really trying to let your child get bullied. And the mistake might have caused some pain, but if we hold the children like they're safe now because we've got them and we model that for them, then we're really giving them a sense of self-esteem. You're safe, and I've got you right here. And he did that, and it hurt, and it was not okay. But I got you now. You're safe. We're going to be right here. I'm with you. And you're creating that dynamic for the child. So those are the first two steps. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give Patty a few minutes to talk, and then we're going to have some Q&A, and then we're going to close. But I want you to know that I'm not just going to leave you with what I said about discipline and with no tools, okay? So there's two things that you're going to get when we finish the class, and one of them is a handout around the five most common discipline practices that create negative results, okay? And you'll have there's some little tips in there for what to do differently. And then you're also going to get a link to a talk by one of my favorite people. Her name is Brené Brown. Probably some of you have already seen the talks. She has two talks. Patty's going to send you a link to one of those talks, and you can look it up. But I would suggest that I think the link I gave Patty is the second talk, and I think what I really want you to see is the first talk. So if you go to TED and you're looking up Brené Brown and there's a link that Patty gave you, you want to see her talk on vulnerability first. And that goes into the difference between shame and vulnerability. And she's a parent, too, and she talks about really how to instill that in your child. It's 20 minutes very well spent. So right now what I want to do is just turn it over to Patty and let her kind of connect how Hand in Hand handles some of this stuff and then offer you guys some time for your questions.
Okay. Thank you, Amy. Very, very helpful. It's really, really helpful to hear your perspective. So I think the one question arose before we started the call, a little bit before our official start time, and that was, if I have a young child, how do I know if my child is being bullied? And I'll just give a quick thought about that. We have four listening tools that we teach that really improve the parent-child connection and keep it fresh and refurbish it when times are hard. It's a good way to reconnect. Special time is kind of the foundation tool, and if you do special time with your child will find a way to let you know that things are hard, and this works with children under the age of two. I know there was one dad who had brought in a home caregiver for his daughter who was, I think, 14 months old at the time, was not talking yet or barely talking, and I think she did have a few words, and the father was concerned. He just didn't know, you know, was his daughter being treated well, and I just said, you know, just do special time, do special time. If there's an issue, she will bring it up in special time. I don't know how she'll do that, but she'll find a way because you are regularly paying attention. Special time is just you set a time, might be 10 minutes, might be 20 minutes on a regular basis, and you shine your attention on your child and you do whatever your child wants to do. And children will make up games or begin to portray what has happened to them or treat you the way they're being treated. They'll find a way to show you that something off is happening in their lives and that it's not sitting well with them. That's why they're bringing it up. What this little girl did was, after 3 weeks of special time, one night she pointed to the floor and pointed with the floor with a lot of vigor and had a frown on her face, you know. And the dad interpreted that to mean sit down. And so he said, oh, shall I sit down? Okay, I'll sit down. And then she looked at him and she went bad and she slapped his knee. And they had never used the word bad and they'd never done any slapping in their family. And he was pretty sure at that point that, you know, this had come from the caregivers, but she was not exposed to very many other adults, and it was a word that they had never used. So, and, you know, from very early age, special time is kind of your window into your child's life. And if there are hard things going on, after you've built a special time relationship and your child can depend on it, you'll find out. You know, you'll find out what kinds of things are sticking in your child's craw, and they'll come up in play or they'll come up in behavior during special time that will let you know that they're having trouble with something. And this is true, you know, from, you know, before two all the way into adolescence. You know, you just have to connect warmly enough and regularly enough, and your child will find a way to let you know. I think the second tool that I'll talk about is play listening. When children are afraid of another child, when an incident has happened and you want to try to help your child regain their sense of power, or maybe it's not a sense that they have, that they are a little timid and they are, you know, easily frightened in social situations, which many young children are, and that's just how they tend, then physical play where you take the less powerful role, so in play that has a tone of affection and a tone of, you know, that they get to try whatever they want, and what you do is you play the less powerful role so that they have a chance to laugh. So you're the one who can't figure things out, and you're the one who they can jump on and you fall over. You know, you're the one who they're on your back and you're giving them a horsey ride and you just can't get them off, and you try to buck them off and you try to buck them off and you try to buck them off and you just can't. And they laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh because finally, you know, they're in the powerful role. And this kind of play is very helpful for developing a child's sense that they can handle things in the middle of the fray. Because what's happening is that, you know, you're creating little survival challenges by trying to catch them. I'm going to give you 10 hugs. I've got 10 hugs for you. Here I come. And then you kind of lumber around or you're on your hands and knees and you reach for them and you fall on the floor and then you can't get them, you know, or you're chasing around the house and you bang into the wall. And instead of, as you reach for them, you miss by 2 feet. And if they laugh, you're doing it well. And that kind of, you know, horsing around and goofing around gives children a sort of a physical sense of their own power. And the laughter releases lots and lots of both embarrassment and light fear, so that when children get to play this way on a regular basis, they become much more physically agile and strong because, you know, these are good challenges. But they also build a sense of their own power, because you're willing to, you know, to be the one who gets gotten. And I know one mom whose child witnessed an abusive event, a shockingly abusive event in her neighborhood. And she found out about it late at night. Her daughter finally told her. And this little story illustrates, Amy's first, step number one quite well. When she found out that her daughter had witnessed this event, she hadn't been the target of it, but it was not something you want your child to ever see. At 10 o'clock at night, this mom put her little girl to bed and then called her listening partner, because she'd been doing listening partnerships for, I think, about a year at that time. Her listening partner appeared on her doorstep within 10 minutes in her nightie to come over and listen to her, and she cried and cried and cried. She cried for a whole hour. Like, this was the kind of thing she had hoped would never happen to any of her children, and she cried really, really hard, and then she started thinking. You know, her mind cleared, and she started thinking, okay, what do I know about helping children when they've been caught feeling helpless in a bad situation? You know, well, you know, play with laughter can really help empower her, and so I think that's what I'm going to do tomorrow before she goes to school. I'm going to start a little pillow fight, and I'm going to, you know, sort of make like I'm going to get her, and I'm going to let her pound on me and, you know, get me, and I'm going to fall down, and I'm going to see if that helps. And her daughter didn't look so great waking up in the morning, but the mom started a pillow fight, and her daughter really got into it. And the mom, you know, played the foil very, very well. The daughter laughed a whole bunch, went off to school looking much better, and they continued on with really working on, you know, the mom helping her daughter gain a sense of power, and then the mom went on and did other things within the neighborhood, trying to figure out how to get to the child who had been hurtful to another child, and how to handle the fact that, you know, that child's family was abusive towards him. And she went through a number of strategies, but the first one was to get help for herself. And the second one was to, you know, really connect with her daughter, get laughter going, put her daughter in a powerful position, and try to help her daughter reclaim her sense of power. And let's see, and I think I'll just say one more example of once you've really learned how to listen with listening partnerships, then you become a more powerful agent for change when difficulties come up outside your family as well as inside your family. And there's one mom that I know whose daughter in the fifth grade was the boys in her class were calling her up and first of all telling her that they like her and they thought she was wonderful and they thought she was pretty, and then after 3 minutes or 4 minutes, a number of boys on the other end of the line would then criticize her and diss her and tell them that that wasn't what they meant at all. It was just these humiliating phone calls, and they kept happening and happening. And what the mom decided to do, we kind of thought this up together, was to go to this school. It was a small class. It was a private school, and she knew the teachers well, and, you know, reported this to them, and came up with this idea that to just talk to the whole class and just say, you know, boys and girls can be friends, and boys and girls want to be friends, and boys are good friends to girls, and girls can be good friends to boys. And I want to talk about where being friends, you know, can sometimes get hard, and we're going to do these little groups. And then the mom took small groups, you know, three or four children at a time, off to a corner of the room while the class was, you know, just the class was doing other things, and said, you know, I want to hear, are there times when a boy or a girl has really been unthoughtful to you? And each child got a chance to answer that question. And then her next question was, what do you think a kid should do if someone is really being hard on you or making fun of you? You know, what are things that kids can do about this? And each child shared their thoughts. And then, you know, what is one thing you would really want to say to somebody who is being hard on you? And then kids, you know, shared their thoughts again. And then she said she had a bunch of pillows with her because she knew the value of playing the less powerful role to sort of lighten the tone. And she said, okay, let's pretend that I'm somebody who just, you know, insulted you out there on the playground. You know, what are you going to do? Wink, wink, wink. You know, and she let kids pick up pillows and pound on her, and she'd fall down on the ground and go, oh, no, oh, no, oh, my gosh, I can't get up. You know, and they laughed and laughed, and, you know, she would do like 3 minutes or 4 minutes of a little, you know, pillow play there, and then, you know, get up. And she had quite a day that day because she went through the whole class and did these small listening groups of 20 or 25 minutes, and her daughter never got another harassing phone call. That was it. And she really gave each child a chance to talk about the problem, talk about their experience with it, talk about, you know, what they thought should happen. And so listening tools can really help you be an ally to children so that their relationships go better. I don't think there's any child who really wants to be mean to another child. And those are some examples of, you know, using listening tools to great advantage on this issue.
And then, Patty, if you thank you so much for all of that. And just to say that if you feel like you can't be the one to do that in the classroom, there are fantastic school-wide programs that do that. And I work for one of them. It's called Soul Shop. And you can look them up online. And they, you know, you can bring those into your elementary schools, K through 5. And we do great assemblies where we teach the students about empathy. And it's school-wide, and it's a year-long program, and we, you know, we really build that sense that the groups as a whole. So if that is daunting to feel like going into the school and having those conversations one-on-one,
we
can definitely do that.
Now, at the high school level, there's a program called Challenge Day, which is now a national program, and they do. It's not aimed directly at bullying, but it is aimed directly at improving, you know, the student relationship in high school, and they are excellent. So,
yeah.
So let's see, Amy, are you at a place where we can see if people have questions?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. If you have a question for Amy or for me or both of us, press star 2, and we will get right to your question. And what I will say is that on this issue, the more, and for this next 15 minutes, the briefer your question can be, the more convinced your question can be, the more of you we can be talking to. So, anybody? Star 2? Okay. Someone from Massachusetts. Well, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you both for all the work you do. I've been using Hand in Hand for a little over a year with my son. He's 5 and a half. And I totally think it's made a difference, but I will say he just tends to have this kind of leader personality, to put it nicely. I think he can come across as bossy, and I totally worry sometimes that that's going to be perceived as being a bully or, you know, just that bossy nature. And I'm always looking for other ways to kind of steer him towards leader instead of bossy. And I think the hand-in-hand tools definitely are slowly working, but I didn't know if there's any other, you know, if he had any other ideas, things like that.
Okay. Sure. Let me start by just saying I have one of those. And he's 11 now. He's almost 11. And I wanted to say that parenting is such an individual process, right? And so if your child has those, especially like Sam's an only child and he's bigger than everyone else and he, you know, and he's just got that capacity, he knows what he wants. And part of that is I have really listened to him well, and he's really developed a sense of himself. And another part is really modeling. So there's a few things that I've done to kind of help him with this. One is I model cooperative leadership in the house. So I model asking him what he wants to do and involving him in the processes, so that we're working on things together and he sees me, the person with the power, doing that. Another one is I play lots of games with him where I let him be in charge. And when we're playing games, I lose miserably. Like, I lose miserably. And I scream and cry and I go, no, no. And I try to be all, like, demanding and stuff, but in a very playful way.
Mm-hmm.
So I can let him release some of the tension of having to be that big personality. And then the other thing that I do for Sam is a lot of contact. And part of that is because people who are dominant or have that leader type quality tend not to get as much contact, which then ends up making them feel like they have to demand more. And so with Sam, a lot of contact, wrestling, hugging, you know, like really high contact play, especially with boys, can help diffuse some of that powerful energy. And then just knowing for yourself, like when you have that worry that he's going to be, when you have that worry that he's going to be perceived as bossy, that you take care of that worry in a listening partnership for yourself, because you don't want him to feel that worry reflected back. And he will.
Right.
You know, he will feel that if it's there for you. So go ahead and, like, do a listening partnership about your experiences there and your worry. And let that go out there. And then you can come back to him with that this is a process, and he is going to have to learn how to get along with his peers. And some of that's going to come through experience. You know, Sam's really had to go through that a little bit, like learning to balance out his size with someone else's perhaps faster decision-making, or, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
We have to hold him with the long view. That's what this is about, holding them with the long view. Does that help?
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so
and
much.
I have one little thing to add, which is there's a response that I call the vigorous snuggle that is great when kids get a certain tone. And I'm betting that tone does come up at home sometimes. And when you hear that tone, you know your child has got, they're disconnected. They're not tuned into you. Otherwise, they wouldn't use that tone. And you can just take any excuse to go after them. It's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe what you just said. Come here, you. You know, and you put a big grin on your face, which is sometimes hard to do if you're irritated. So that's where the listening partnership comes in, so that you're not walking around with 5 days worth of irritation, you know, in your emotional backpack. So you can just, you know, put your arms out big and, you know, come here, you. You know, sort of big bear hug is what's coming at him, and he can run, and you can chase, and you can get him, and he can get it. I mean, you basically, you know, anybody who sounds like that, I'm going to hang them by their toes, you know, and you hang them upside down and shake them a little bit, and basically just, you know, mess around with them physically, and that usually brings lots of laughter, and it begins the reconnection process. And, you know, when you intervene with a vigorous snuggle as, you know, the way that you, or one way that you handle, you know, the disconnection that shows up with that kind of a tone, you'll unlock, you'll create enough safety so that when he is really scared, he can actually go in and cry hard about it, cry and fight, and have a big emotional episode that lets some of that fear drain. Really the biggest progress that children make when they're a little scared and a little separate, kind of, you know, as a rule, is to have a disappointment or you set a limit and they're really upset, and you move in and you stay with them and you let them have that upset, and that can really drain a lot of fear and a lot of tension if you can stay with them through that, which I'm sure you're already doing.
Yeah, I sometimes forget to use that tactic. But yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for asking. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So someone has a question who's in Los Angeles. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Hi. So this is Abigail in Los Angeles. Hi, Patty.
Hey, Abigail.
My now almost 7-year-old is in class, and there is a new kid who came in who is a foster child, just been taken out of his home, and I guess has a new situation, and it's already been a difficult, challenging class year anyway. They had a different teacher than they were supposed to have. It became a 1-2 split because it's a public school and the numbers didn't match up, and it's just been a challenging class all year. And then they finally kind of got their groove, and then this new kid just came in about 2-3 weeks ago. And within the first 4 days had stabbed several of the kids with a pencil and punched several of the kids in the stomach and told one of the kids that he didn't like white people. And it was really very upsetting. And He was supposed to have an aide, and the aide didn't show for the first few days, and the teacher happened to be out for those first few days, so there was a sub. It was just, like, the worst of all possible situations.
Oh, gee.
Yeah. And so, you know, a lot of the parents got really upset, and because we're a school that practices counsel, we started thinking, well, maybe we could get a counsel together. This teacher was really adamant about reporting everything, and which was important because a lot of really big stuff was happening, and kids were starting to get really scared to go to school. And so we talked about having a counsel, and I think ultimately the principal got really upset with the IEPs and told them they had to have somebody there, so they finally got somebody on him all the time, and the real teacher came back, and long story short, about a week later, he seems to have settled down quite a bit. But I'm not sure. It's been an interesting discussion in our community, going at first from, like, outrage and shock and, like, oh, my God, this child needs to be in some sort of helpful, like, almost halfway house emotionally before they can be put into this school. Like, it's not fair to the child, and it's not fair to the rest of the children. And then also feeling like, well, wait, how can we reach out? And so my son didn't talk at all. He doesn't ever tell me anything about what's going on. And so I heard from a lot of the other kids, and I kind of tried to bring it up with him. And then I said, you know, I think he's having a hard time. He's got a lot of changes happening, and I wonder how we could support him. And he didn't really seem too troubled about it. He was like, yeah, he's been hurting lots of kids. And so, you know, I noticed other off things about him, which I will attribute to that. But I was just wondering, as a community, ultimately the child seems to have settled in. It's only been about 2 weeks. And we weren't sure what to do. Like, should we have a parent council? Should we try to have a kids council? Should we just let the kids settle in and not say anything? And, you know, like, it's such a tough situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Patty, do you want to take this, or you want me to take it? I'm happy to take it.
You go ahead, Annie.
So I really appreciate, I don't know what your counsel consists of, but I appreciate that you have that and that you went there. And I also really appreciate how you're talking about it. Like, I can really feel your concern for both the kids, for all of the kids, and for the parents. And I think that in a situation like that, a couple of things to be aware of is that, you know, the school can only do so much in terms of the contact that's there. Because they only have so much money for staff and so much budget and so much, and I don't know if you're in a private or public school.
For a public school.
But in a public school, there's a limited resource.
Yeah.
And so for parents, I usually will recommend a couple of things. Like, one, you can bring in an expert who could, like, I go in and I teach about how things work, how the brain and nervous system work together with something like what this child has probably experienced, being separated from his family, and get someone to come in and teach them interventions. Like, you can do playground interventions. You can ask the principal if there's a way that you could have parents doing a rotating yard duty where they're really keeping their eye out there. And if they're going to do a rotating yard duty, though, they really need to be trained in how to intervene and set limits positively.
Mm-hmm.
So that when something's going on, there's someone there who knows to pay attention and can really devote their attention.
Mm-hmm.
Because a yard duty's got to be watching everybody on the playground.
Mm-hmm.
So having a parent, rotating parents that can go in, but making sure that they know how to intervene positively. Because most parents who go in would intervene with anger or fear toward that child. And that's going to make everything worse. So you really want to be able to teach them how to hold the limits. And if you want to, when we wrap up this call in a few minutes, I'm going to offer some consultations. If you want to call me, I'd be happy to kind of go step by step for you in more detail. But I definitely think having a counsel and being the voice for, you know, seven-year-olds need a lot of intervention, right? They need adults to have faith in them and play with them and teach them how to act together. And when someone comes in with that kind of trauma, they need someone who can hold limits that are positive that allow that child to offload some of his tension. You know, I had a recently do a very quick thing because it's time for us to go, but my good friend adopted two kids out of the foster system, and one of them was 3 and the other one was 4, and we were out on the playground, and the 4-year-old started playing this game, and I was just chasing him lightly, you know, and then he looked at me with this stare, and he fell over on the playground. He shot me with a gun, and then he fell over on the playground as if he was the one that had been shot. And I happened to know that his dad was a gang member and his mom was a drug addict. And so, like, I knew that he had probably seen something like that in his life. Mm. And so in that moment, I made a split-second decision to play with him and just help him move some of that through his system. And so he was lying on the ground with his eyes open in this really kind of crazy look, like someone would really look like if they were having a drug seizure or something on the ground. I mean, it was really kind of jarring. And I just looked down, and I very gently, I go, "Wake up! I'm sad without you. Wake up! Wake up! Wake up!" Like in a light, playful way, but I took on the role that he would have, right? And I was like, "Wake up, please, please." And he opened his eyes, like he looked up at me and caught my gaze, and then he stood up and he did the whole thing again. And I chased him around going, wake up, we did the answer, come get me, you know, like, and we played like that for 20 minutes. And he just did it over and over and over again. Because he just needed to get it out and have someone get what was going on there for him. So, but we'll give you an opportunity to call and set up a consultation. We could talk about something specific for you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I guess what I think on in there is that when a child who needs extra resource, you know, comes into a classroom and the extra resource is absent, if a parent, you know, understands some listening tools, understands not to blame a child for their difficulties, then that parent, you know, could just step in and volunteer to be the extra resource, to be the friendly patrol, the person who kind of stays close by. And, you know, if a child starts, you know, being hard on another child, just simply reach in and get their body between the child and the other child and just not allow it to happen, and but also not blame the child and not lecture them, just make sure it can't happen. And that would be the first, you know, the first important move to make is you've got to have more resources. You've got a child like that in the classroom. You can't leave a teacher and children alone trying to handle something that none of them are prepared to or resourced to handle. So,
Great. Yeah. Thanks, Patty.
Thank you, Amy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Amy, why don't you let people know how they can get a hold of you or what's coming their way if they've signed up for this summer seminar so that they know they'll be able to contact you.
Okay, great. Thank you. So I just want to say thank you for being here, and I really believe that this work, this parent-to-parent work that we're doing, is the way that we bring about real lasting change for our children. So I know we've brought up a lot tonight, and there's just so much more. So what I wanted to do is offer you a more individual and deeper way to get started and really know what it is you're going to be saying with your child and doing with your child specifically. So I'm offering, my free gift is a 20-minute Bully Proof Your Kids breakthrough session, and it's free. And you can find it on my website. It's just amymaclean.com, and I'm going to spell it out, amymaclean.com, amymaclean.com. If you're not sure how to spell it, you'll be getting a link with the recording that Hand in Hand is going to send you after the call. And I encourage you to just go there and check in with me, and let's take 20 minutes to get you clear on your next step, because these issues need to be handled. They need to be handled now, and they can be handled, and we can do that together. So I'm happy to have a consultation with you, and you can sign up right there on my site.
Wow, what an offer, Amy. That's great. And from Hand in Hand, we have, for one thing, I just want to let people know that there is another teleseminar. We're really and focusing on aggression as our theme for this month. And so on Monday at 11:30 to 12:30 p.m. Pacific time, Maya Coleman from Washington, D.C. and Susanna Egri from Hungary are going to do a teleseminar called How Do I Stop My Child from Hurting Other People? Both of them have good experience with this, with hand-in-hand instructors, and they want to sort of guide you through the maze of childhood aggression to a calmer, more peaceful path. So if your child is the one that's lashing out, this will certainly be of help. And it's free. So you can sign up for it on our website. You just go to calendar, and at the top there's a link to teleseminars, and you can register there. And the second thing is that we have a special offer for you. If you sign up for a Building Emotional Understanding course, which is a 6-week course where you get six 90-minute mentoring calls with not more than 5 other parents, and one of our instructors who will guide you in learning how to use listening tools, and you'll get about 9 hours of video of me teaching you about how to use listening tools, then you can have free access to our No More Hitting course, which is another 3 hours of video about aggressive behavior and how to change your child from a scared and therefore aggressive little person to a child who's not carrying so much fear and is much more in touch with themselves and with other people. So we'll be telling you more about that offer in the email that's coming out after this call. We're sending it out to everybody who registered. So you were here, but you'll get a recording of our call, and you'll get Amy's materials, links from her, and an offer to join our Building Emotional Understanding course and get the No More Hitting self-guided course as well. So thank you for coming. We really hope this has been helpful. I really want to thank you, Amy, for it's very clear when you speak that you've got the 10 years of experience of really studying this and experimenting with this and teaching about stopping bullying, and I so appreciate your attention tonight.
Thanks, Patty. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, and thank you all parents for coming. Thanks for the good, hard work that you do.
Yeah.
Go ahead, you get to say goodbye as well.
No, I just wanted to thank you, Patty, because I know that this work is everything to you. You know, it's just been your whole heart, and you've helped so many, many, many people. And I always appreciate getting to be in dialogue with you on both sides. There's so much that we can do at home, and there's so much that we can do to intervene at school. And just really want to encourage people to jump into both of these arenas and get support in your parenting. Work hand in hand and get support with your school and with bullying with me. Jump in, because we really are changing the world just person by person here and helping people with this. So really appreciate all your time.
And you'll be in good hands with Amy if you decide to, you know, avail yourself of her services. You'll be in great hands. So thank you all. We're glad you came, and we hope you come to another teleseminar sometime.
Thanks for joining us. Hand in Hand is here to help you get the support you need for your work as a parent. To download podcasts on additional parenting topics, go to handinhandparenting.org. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.